Welcome once more to the Action Factory podcast. My name is Michael Dawson and I developed the Solutions Toolkit. It's a universal framework for residential youth work teams. And in that training course, we adopt and adapt some of the most powerful change strategies ever created from many different disciplines. If you're a residential youth worker, then maybe, like me, you have found that traditional models, wonderful as they are, fail to copy and paste into your unique work environment. I decided to change all that by allowing you to be the expert, and in turn, we developed a toolkit that works for you. We're not here today to talk about the Solutions Toolkit. If that interests you, then by all means, pop over to theactionfactory.com and you can get the free download and enjoy the free team training module that's there. However, as I said, it does utilize the very best change techniques ever created, and one of those is NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming. And in its most basic form, it's managed to codify and break down the most successful change techniques. So that's why I was absolutely fascinated to maybe introduce you to NLP, and in particular to find ways in which you can use it in residential youth work. This is where my passion lies. It's what I call the greatest job in the world. And at this point, you may want to kind of pop back a number of episodes to the beginning of the course. They're all delivered in commutable size chunks that you can listen to on the bus and practice at work. So this week we're going to be talking about substance abuse. Substance abuse takes many forms, from the legal and socially acceptable, such as the drugs we pay tax on, in short, and the legal kind, all potentially damaging, of course, but still, even we as staff engage in some of the more legal kind. You know, the ones we do pay tax on, bear in mind, at the same time, probably discouraging their use by our young people. Yes, I know, that was always something that kind of niggled me, to be honest. But for the sake of today, let's brush over that, as we always do in life. After all, we're grown-ups. So as I preach to the converted, so what you think, there's an air of cynicism today? I don't know, maybe I'm not sleeping well. Or maybe it's the subject matter. Who knows? So I'll tell you a story. I had a friend once, and he will remain nameless for obvious reasons. So he conducted what I believe to be a very risky, yet interesting experiment. He decided to take heroin. He also decided that no matter what, he would only ever take the drug once. Once in his entire life. So when I asked him why he was doing this, he said he simply wanted to know what heroin was like. In fact, I'm going back some years now. This probably predated the kind of invention of crack and a lot of other kind of manufactured drugs that we've got today. So this is exactly what he did. Okay, so if I'm not mistaken, at the time, my belief was that heroin was addictive. And to me, that meant you take a hit and you're an addict. And in fact, this isn't or wasn't the case. Certainly not with my friend, and probably isn't generally. Disclaimer, this is a story. It is not drug advice. So he took the drug and I asked him what it was like. Bear in mind, I wasn't kind of around when this all happened. And the answer he gave me sent a shiver down my spine. And I'll tell you why. He said it was incredible. In fact, he described it as follows. You know when you have an orgasm? Well, it's like that, but all over your body. He went on to say that he fully understood the way that people will come back for more. Of course, he never did. If anything ever convinced me to never try hard drugs, then that was it. It just sounded too damn good. In a residential care environment, you'll have come across, you know, the full substance abuse menu. It's a perfect storm of kind of peer pressure, teenagers, the effects of abuse on young people. And these factors all play a part in how young people are not only introduced to substances like tobacco and alcohol, but how they can become a piece of the young person's lives. So the substance can offer a means of escape from the situation our clients find themselves in. And it can become a crutch that never goes away. And then there's also the added factors of availability and the dynamic of residential care. The peer groups constantly evolving, and so is the dynamic. So There's this teenage desire to experiment, and as I expect we all did at some stage. So you look at the mountain of drugs that are there. You know, you've got alcohol, tobacco, nicotine. You've got prescription medication, marijuana, weed, inhalants. You've got all these designer synthetic drugs. You've got club drugs. You've got household products, you know, which I have experienced with young people. So what have we learned in these episodes and beyond is that telling young people not to do it, trying to force them not to do it, is least effective. After all, if logic was applied, then none of us would drink or smoke. But we do. This episode isn't designed to explain the dangers of drugs to young people and why we take them and the harm and the risk involved. In fact, that's either self-evident or you as a residential youth workers are far more knowledgeable than me on that particular subject. What we're really talking about, as always, is our influence on human behaviour, and that's what you're here for. Then NLP might have some answers for us. We'll agree, shall we, that young people will experiment, that most survive that experimentation. After all, we did. And we can also agree that as a rule of thumb, drugs are bad. Let's just go along with that. How can NLP explain how and why these substances are used, and more importantly, what tools are available to manage these behaviours? So if you're new here, you might not have heard me say again and again, we have this added caveat here, and that is that you are forced to change the behaviour of often others that are not yourself. That's your job in a nutshell. As corporate parents, your job generally is to change the behaviour positively for the young people you care for. Neuro-linguistic programming does provide insights into risky behaviours, and it emphasises the role of, you know, thoughts, emotions, communication patterns in driving these behaviours. Here are the key ideas of what NLP says about risky behaviour and why we do it. NLP talks about limiting beliefs as a factor, maybe the feeling of powerlessness. We have talked about that in earlier episodes. There is an episode on limiting beliefs and how you can work with these in this audio course. If you skim back, you'll find that. And NLP talks about submodalities, which are the finer distinctions, you know, within the five senses, how we see, hear, touch, all of those things, how we experience our world. And this influences how individuals perceive the benefits and drawbacks of these kinds of behaviours. And NLP techniques can help reframe these submodalities to shift perceptions. Again, please refer back to that particular episode. Anchoring is another one. Risky behaviours can become anchored to certain triggers or situations. Not least, I expect, the actual release of the drugs. The drugs release you from all kinds of pressures and give so much pleasure. NLP would ask us to break these anchors and replace them with healthier ones. Communication perhaps. These are another idea of why we do risky behaviour, negative self-talk, internal dialogue. These contribute things like values and motivations. You know, many risky behaviours are driven by an underlying need or value that is something about, in essence, what you are. NLP views risky behaviour as patterns rooted in an individual's internal representations, beliefs and thought processes. This isn't entirely helpful, but in all, I'd summarise all of that by saying that it's a pretty deep issue. It's something very internal. I no longer smoke, but I know I started because it was cool. And I was a teenager, and not long afterwards, alcohol made me less self-conscious and easygoing, especially with girls. This was great. I became really funny and interesting in an instant. But of course I didn't, and I just thought I did. Is there any way in which we can use NLP to help our young people with substance abuse? Let's face it, we don't want them doing what we do on a daily basis. I'm sorry, that was my cynicism again. Okay, so there are two kinds of young person. There's those who may turn to us for help and support because they are motivated to stop and to reduce their issue. Then there's those who are unmotivated, those who believe would benefit from our influence, our outside influence. We believe that. First, let's look at those who are motivated, those who want to engage. The goal is to change the way they mentally represent their drug use, to reduce cravings and make quitting more appealing, and help provide tools that could help them in a positive way. We could ask the person to recall vivid memories of positive, drug-free experience, such as moments of joy and accomplishment. And then we could associate those memories with submodalities, such as color and mental image and all of those experiences. And by doing this, you help them reframe their perception of drug use, making it less appealing in comparison to positive memories. That's an NLP approach. But how are we going to do that? How are we going to adapt that? Well, perhaps encouraging them through conversation to regularly revisit and reinforce this reframed perception. You know, we could assist them in creating new positive experiences and anchors to further strengthen the motivation to stay drug-free. Another one is to deal with the value elicitation, the alignment of those that substance abuse. NLP technique would say to use a value elicitation process to identify their core values. And once you've identified the core value, you explore how drug use aligns or conflicts with these core values. You know, so you've got that conversation there about quitting substances, how that can be shifted to fit in more with the values than the continued drug use. Again, we ask the question, how can we adapt that kind of technique into what we do? We're not NLP experts. We don't intend to be. You could certainly encourage regular reflection on the values and how staying drug-free supports their goals, and provide ongoing support and coaching, you know, to realign the daily choice within their life. And when I finally gave up smoking, I felt a shift. I'd tried a lot of times. But when I said to other people and myself, I don't smoke, a statement that aligned with the new set of values, I'm sorry, but it worked for me. I even went outside and stood with the smokers because I still kept that within. You know, that's just a personal thing. But certainly, there was definitely a shift in alignment. And then you've got timeline therapy, which is to help the individual reframe their past drug use experience and recreate a compelling future without it. Now, the NLP technique is to guide them through a timeline therapy session. That's to explore the timeline of their life and pinpoint the origin of the drug use and facilitate a process to release negative emotions associated with past drug use, positive emotions and beliefs about a drug-free future. I don't entirely agree with that. I must be up and honest. I don't entirely agree with going backwards with anything and exploring any of that kind of idea of why I use drugs, etc. Well, that's all a bit advanced. And even that technique, I admit, is a bit advanced. But we could encourage the teenager to visualize the drug-free future regularly, talk and use language. It's already happened. Help them set smaller, achievable goals on a timeline, reinforce the progress towards a substance-free life. These NLP techniques and what we've adapted, we can see going back through this series, and this is why it helps me so much doing these podcasts. I can see that going back through the series, how a lot of these techniques call back to some of the common things, such as relationships with young people, trust, the language developed, and all of those kinds of things, and predicting our future. What about those who are not motivated, but they need our influence? There are three NLP techniques that can be adapted for a residential youth work scenario to influence the behavior of young people who are not motivated to stop using drugs or substances, maybe shift them in a positive way. There's questioning. They're called meta-model questioning, but you're working with a young person, he's in a residential home, and he's not motivated to quit drug use, and is resistant to change. We challenge those limited beliefs and encourage critical thinking about drug use. That's what we're trying to do. In NLP, when the young person expresses reasons for not quitting, you know, we'd ask questions like, what specifically makes you believe drugs are the only solution? Or how do you know for sure that you can't change the situation? These questions will encourage them to explore their thought processes and potentially identify opportunities for positive change. That certainly supports some of the stuff we've done in this course. However, how are we going to adapt that as youth workers? Well, we could foster open and non-confrontational communication. That is, create safe spaces for young persons to express their concerns and reservations, listen effectively and ask the right questions. So that I don't think has ever been an issue for me as a worker or as a kid in care. You know, it's always been open space and people were allowed to talk about what they wanted. The next NLP technique might be to employ language patterns which use hypnotic language to gently shift perspectives. So when discussing drug use, use subtle reframing techniques. For instance, instead of saying drugs help you escape your problems, you might say people sometimes find it valuable to explore healthier ways to manage stress. Again, residential youth workers, we're not NLP experts. How can we work with that? Well, we could encourage young people to explore alternative coping mechanisms, you know, mindfulness. I used to do chill out nights with gangs of teenagers, boisterous, loud, excitable teenagers, and they absolutely loved it. They absolutely loved the chill out nights, semi kind of meditation, music, all that kind of thing. Sports, creative activities. You know, once you become what you determine in your identity as a sports person, then drugs become further and further from your world. So you're finding the positive sources of support. And that includes your friends, your family members, the group you hang out with. You can see how it all starts to call back, doesn't it? If you're now hanging out with all the guys in the football team, they're more likely to want to be fitter and healthier than be hanging out taking drugs. So it all joins together. So I'm going to miss out the next one because I feel like I'm talking too much, but they are all on the notes. They are simply ways. If you click on the notes and download the PDF, you'll find there are little reminders from the series and from this session. Every single PDF is different. I'll leave it on there because there are ways that we have to adapt this into our work. So there we go. At the risk of talking too much, that's substance abuse and NLP from a perspective of working with teenagers, and in particular, those in residential care environments. And now I hope it helps us understand the mysterious ways in which we as humans can so readily engage in destructive behaviour. And I think for me, it's highlighted that the logic behind it all can go so much deeper than we see. This being the case, I hope it clarifies how important you are on a day-to-day basis in the lives of the young people you work with. So I'll make a set of notes. They'll be available around this episode. Somewhere there's no sign-up, simply click to download. Those are your memory joggers. If you're interested in a universal framework for residential youth work teams, then you might want to visit theactionfactory.com, download the Big Four, Why They Matter. It's available at the Start Here page. It's a two-minute read that shows the data that confirms what you probably already know, that you are best placed to support your clients and your young people before, during, and after crisis. Most importantly, that you have got the greatest job in the world. Thank you so much for being there. And before I go, if this little commutable chunk of audio has been useful and you've got time before you reach your bus stop, then a click or a subscribe is a nice way of whispering to others like you and telling the internet you like us. And if you don't, then have no fear. I'll be back here next Monday as we delve closer to the concluding episode of this series, NLP in Residential Youth Work. My name's been Michael Dawson. Thank you so much for being there. This has been the Action Factory podcast. Bye for now.